Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, and I am delighted that you're spending a little time with me today. This is a really fascinating episode for me. We're talking about cross-dressing, and first of all, it may be way more common than you think. I certainly see it in my sex therapy practice frequently, and I have found Dr. Carol Clark to come talk to me about this so that you can learn more. You may be a cross-dresser. Maybe there's a cross-dresser in your life, or if not, well, maybe there is and you don't know it yet. The reason I'm doing the episode is to demystify this, take away the stigma and the shame, get the accurate information out there, and prepare people to receive somebody who might reveal that they're a cross-dresser, and to validate that, to be curious, to accept it, and to learn from it. So that's the point of our conversation today, and I hope you find it really interesting. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So, Carol, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, Jessa. I'm so happy to be here.
And I was telling you before I hit record, I've been wanting to do an episode on cross-dressing because I had a request or two for it, and it is something that shows up in my practice. So I'm excited we get to talk about it. And I wanted to start off just right away, the intersection of cross-dressing and gender and how we even define it, because, you know, I don't think we normally think of women, people identify as women, cross-dressing if they wear overalls or you know, a suit and a hat or something, you know, like it is a term sort of specifically, it's got gender implications, right?
It has gender implications as far as, you know, how we present one, a person identifying as one gender, but presenting as another. And then maybe in so doing, feeling like another gender. Mm-hmm. So if you want, I'll go ahead and start with a definition of cross-dressing.
Yeah, perfect.
So cross-dressing is, yeah, wearing the clothes of that are normally associated with the other sex.
Okay.
The other gender. And we have sex meaning, you know, the sex you were assigned at birth, the sex that is your chromosomes, that your body, your sex characteristics, primary and secondary. And then gender is between the ears. Gender is how we identify ourselves. And these days, we go way beyond binary genders. There's all kinds of gender presentations, gender identities. And so people are identifying not just male or female, but they're identifying in all kinds of other ways. And then when we talk about cross-dressing, we're looking at dressing is how we present what clothes we're wearing, either outer clothes or under clothes, and how that identifies with our gender. So, and then all of that is separate from sexual orientation, which who we're attracted to.
Right.
What gender are we attracted to? What presentation are we attracted to? What are we attracted to? So traditionally, cross-dressing is about heterosexual males present wearing the clothes, female clothing.
Okay.
And that's the simple definition. That there's a lot of ways to pick all of that apart. And there's
right.
A lot of people out there that would be happy to do so. But it really just becomes the simple way of looking at this. A cross-dresser is someone who's identifies as male. They're fine being male. They usually identify as heterosexual. And they like to dress up as females or in female presentation.
Okay.
And we separate that from transvestic disorder or transvestism, which although the word transvestic is Latin for crossdresser, it still has taken on a sexual connotation.
Okay.
When we're talking about crossdressing, we're generally talking about someone who is crossdressing in order to just feel comfortable with themselves because they like expressing themselves differently for various reasons that I can discuss in a few minutes, a little bit later. But that is separate from crossdressing for sexual gratification. And generally, everything is general.
right.
Please, everybody listening to this, we got to speak it. We have to start with generalities and then we can fine tune things. So generally, a crossdresser is presenting wearing outer clothes, maybe putting on makeup, putting on all the accoutrements of gender, of female attire for various reasons, whereas your transvestite, somebody who's doing it for sexual gratification, is putting on underclothes, putting on silky, sexy under things, and then somehow getting sexual gratification from that.
That is really interesting because, of course, in my own sex therapy practice, I have talked with people doing this in a variety of ways for a variety of reasons, but I never really thought to separate. I mean, I knew they were two distinct kinds of approaches, but I never thought to put them in sort of two different buckets, if we're going to bucket people, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's important to do that because we want to know the nature of what we're talking about. And ultimately, if we're talking about therapy and therapists, it's we're looking at what brings a person in our door.
Yeah.
And so someone who is paraphilic, doing paraphilia type behaviors, which would be the sexual, doing something for sexual gratification, that person is generally coming in our door at the behest of another person, usually a partner, who says, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like you doing so much of this. And then our practice is to look at, okay, is there a way to blend, to work this out, to negotiate some kind of compromise, to allow somebody to go off and do what they want to do? And so there's a lot of different ways to approach that. The crossdresser, crossdressing, is maybe the person comes in our door because they're having a personal problem with it. Somehow it's not gelling their own belief system, their religion, maybe it's become more obsessive compulsive than they would like. There's a lot of reasons somebody might come in for that, or they're coming in at the behest of a partner who also, not because of the sexual part, but just, I don't like being with someone who is doing this for whatever reasons they are.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start too. Is somebody who's cross-dressing, how often is it ever the beginning of somebody identifying as transgender? Is it a bridge towards, wait, I actually want to be female? Or is it?
So it may be or it may not be. That's always a concern for the people around that person. You know, so we have people who say around puberty or even younger start wearing, you know, I'll have male identified people who say that when they were kids, when they were teenage years, they would wear their sister's clothes, their mother's clothes, and even around puberty, because everything becomes sexual at puberty. So it can be sexual at that time, but it doesn't always last. So there's somebody that it starts out like they're cross-dressing. Now we have to ask them, you know, what was the allure of that? What was your motivation? And they might have been just experimenting. You know, teenage years are a time of trying on different identities. Mm-hmm. So they're just experimenting, trying on identities. And maybe they move on to say, you know, I really am. And maybe they always believed they really were the, you know, female, if we're talking about identified males. Okay, so then they're saying, no, I really am female. And this is how I started out, was just trying on being female, as opposed to someone who is cross-dressing because it feels sexy, because they like to take a break from being male. Because I had one guy, he and his wife came in, and they both had this concern, you know, what does it mean? And he was relating that when he was a kid, so this is one client, he was relating that when he was a kid, his aunts would all get around him and they'd paint his fingernails and they'd dress him up and they'd make a big deal out of him. They gave him a lot of attention. And when he grew up, he became very high powered job, real typically masculine macho behavior and everything. And so he said he would just cross dress and kind of go all the way just to take a break, to relax, and to feel nurtured, to recall those warm, loving, affectionate feelings that he got from the females around him at that
time.
So that's just one instance of what might motivate this behavior.
Right. So while it might be that someone is transgender, it doesn't necessarily mean that, right? Like, no, we don't have to jump to conclusions and think, oh my gosh, you want to change or, you know, or live expressed as another gender.
Yeah. So cross-dressing can mean that I just like to put on different clothes.
Yeah.
And as you started out saying, yeah, women and identified women in our society, people, cisgender women, let's say, cisgender, for anybody who doesn't know, is a term used for females assigned at birth who are good. They identify as female.
Yeah. Everything's aligned there. So, right.
So I'm personally, I identify as a cisgender female. I also identify as heterosexual, just my social location. I'm white. I'm from the Northeast. But I've worked for 30 years now with trans people. And so cisgender female often dress in very masculine clothing, masculine identified clothing, because that varies from culture to culture and age to age. You know, in the 1700s, men were wearing all kinds of frilly stuff that they wouldn't wear now. So yeah, there's some days I wake up and I put on very masculine clothing. And then once in a while, I like to be all girly. Me, not so much, but some women do. You know, women have that a little more latitude with expressing themselves in a variety of ways.
At least in our culture. Yeah.
In our culture,
yeah.
Men have less so. And so it's more noticeable, but they still have that drive. A lot of them have that drive, and probably a lot more would do it if it was socially acceptable.
Right. Okay. So they're not necessarily transgender. How much are they thought or suspected of being gay, right?
Yeah. Okay. So in general, our cross-dressers are heterosexual men who like to wear with women's clothing. Then generally we have amongst homosexual identified people, men, we have guys who are happy being male. They identify as male and they'll wear female attire for entertainment purposes. So that's kind of the generalization a big bucket of people fit into.
Yeah.
So we have the female impersonators. Drag queen has become taken on. It's one of those terms that we don't use so much anymore. Although there's drag queens out there that will say I'm a drag queen, but not being a drag queen myself, I will say, you know, we'll say for female impersonators, and they make a living. They enjoy doing it. You have somebody like RuPaul, mm-hmm. who clearly says I am a female impersonator.
Loves
dressing up, but is doesn't identify as cross-dresser. I don't know that, and uses, you know, male pronouns. I don't know what his sexual, as far as dressing in female clothing, but, you know, he's pretty happy identifying as gay male and dresses up for entertainment purposes.
Right.
That's pretty much what we'll find, but I'm sure you will find such variety that I don't always hear about even in 30 years.
So yeah.
I'm sure you can find some gay men who can cross-dress. You know, they cross-dress and enjoy it. And for the most part, I have to say, you know, with all my years of doing this, it's the heterosexual males that come into my office.
Yeah.
It's not the gay men.
Yeah. It's just so clear how complicated this is and how important it is. We understand why any particular person is doing what they're doing and what it means to them, you know, and not to just sort of jump to conclusions or decide we already know, you know, where they're coming from or our fear is true, like if it's our partner or something like that.
Yeah. So a lot of partners worry, what does this mean? Does this mean my partner wants to be a woman?
Yeah.
And what's going to happen to us? And who is this person?
Right.
And we don't know. We don't know until we ask him.
Right, right.
And there are a lot, I have run into a sizable number of we'll say men, that cross-dress, enjoy cross-dressing, and who have said, you know, if it wasn't that I was happily married and in love with my wife, I probably would go further. I would go on hormones, or I would get surgery. I would go all the way, they say. But I'm okay not doing that. I can just do this, and I'm fine.
Yeah.
They made that concession. There's other people that truly identify and say, no, I'm female and I have to transition. I have to do this.
Right.
So that really runs the gamut of what people feel internally and what they're able to do or not do.
This is Jess. I'm just taking a quick break, and I want to make sure you know about the guide I wrote about how to talk to your partner about sexual concerns. This comes up a lot in my practice. People have struggles, and it takes them so long to bring it up with their partner. They're afraid that that conversation is going to go badly, their partner's going to be upset, the partner's going to be defensive, or they just don't know how to talk about sex and sexual problems. Common problem. So I wrote this guide that really helps you address this. It helps you prepare for the conversation, how to introduce the conversation, and then tips about how to actually get through the conversation so that you can change things with your partner as a team. If you are interested in this guide, you can find it at bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Again, bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Happy to send it to you. And again, in generalizations, you're saying people either cross-dress for sexual gratification or for comfort, freedom, expression, expressing their feminine, you know, some other cluster of motivation. It's not both.
You know, there's always some people that, you know, that you could say that. So kind of reminds me, you know, I watch Law and Order and the counsel is saying, well, isn't it possible that?
Well, yes, I realize it's possible, but in general.
So in general, what I see more of and what I think most of the people I work, you know, who do this kind of work, you know, what we see is it's one or the other. But okay. Can it be both? Sure.
Right.
You know, sure.
So do these two things develop from different root experiences? I mean, how much of the time is there a memory, like the client you were talking about who remembered his aunt's painting his nails and all that attention? Like, you know, he could source that back to a point in time. Is that generally true?
It only matters.
Does it matter that people even wonder about that?
Okay. You know, when we ask that question, well, why does this person do this? We're generally looking at something that we don't like them doing, but we're trying to make it okay that they're doing it. So, you know, because for the most part,
or that we are doing it, right? Like, why am I doing this?
You know, could we redo if somebody's doing it to get warm, fuzzy feelings?
Yeah.
Could we do some role plays, or could we do some, have a couple do more nurturing, or could we do other things to meet that need in a different way? Well, we probably could if we really needed to, if the person really said, no, I want to stop this. I've noticed that for a lot of cross-dressers, there is an obsessive compulsive aspect to it for a lot of people. It is just a thing. This is what they're doing. And why is it obsessive compulsive? I don't know. It just is. And the problem is the way that comes out is they, for a lot of people, they have this real need to do it. It's just something in them. This is what I need to do. And when they try to stop doing it, then they get into this cycle of, and it makes me weep. It makes my little Scottish penny pinching heart weep at what people will spend on clothes and shoes and all the stuff that goes with that, because they'll spend thousands on building up a wardrobe with wigs and makeup, jewelry, and then throw it all away. No, I'm never going to do this again.
Right. Yeah, I've heard this. I've heard the same thing. Yeah, how many times they've restocked and done it, then throw it away, and then do it again and throw it away. Yeah,
but it's not really addiction because it's really something more innate. And yeah, it's not something to be fixed. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And not something to be fixed. I mean, you know, nothing's wrong.
It has that nature, that binging and purging.
Right.
And they'll call it that. But it's not the addictive. It's not an addict binging and purging. It's a,
yeah,
here's something in me that I don't like this thing in me. And so really, if we could fix society to say, hey, dress how you want. You be you. And really be that way. Then, yeah, they wouldn't have a problem. And they wouldn't have to be in this position.
Right. So is there any difference between someone who's going to cross-dress for any of those other reasons versus it's sexualized? Do we know anything about the...
Well, the
sexualized, I mean, I sort of even hate to say the cause, but like
transvestites,
why those two paths?
And the difference between like saying someone is a transvestite or has transvestistic. I don't know what you would call it. There, but someone who just likes to do that for sexual gratification versus someone who has a transvestic disorder, which is what we see in the DSM, is that the transvestic disorder means that the person experiences significant distress for a period of 6 months or more. Okay, so let's be clear about that. So.
Okay.
And that
oh, okay. Disorder just from
saying,
having that desire
like
or that inclination, right? Not from
distress.
Right. So it's not the fact that they're wearing underclothing of the other gender that
fine.
Creates
we're
the disorder. It's
walk.
Their distress around the fact
but
that they're
coming
doing
to my
that.
Office
okay.
because if you're saying it's a problem, it's causing a problem either in yourself or a problem with your partner. And then there's the fact that once it, if it's transvestic disorder, it falls under the category of paraphilic disorders. And paraphilic disorders are pretty immutable. And generally for people with paraphilic disorders, there is a schism between sex and emotion. So they're having sex is about sex. It's about what turns me on. It's about objectifying what turns me on. And that's separate from I love you or I really care about you. And sex is an expression of the intimacy we feel together. Okay, so those two things part ways when you have a paraphilic disorder that may or may and paraphilia with or without significant distress. So a lot of paraphilics don't have significant distress, but they still have fantasies. They have their arousal template is something that's been objectified, whether it's a person or clothing or objects, real objects, body parts. So that's someone that when
object
you come to
or body
office,
part or whatever.
Because then a partner says, look, I was fine when we got together. And usually he says, you know, said, oh, I like to wear this when I have sex. And the partner's like, oh, okay, I'm cool. I can get into that. But then it becomes every time. And the partners, so the partner starts feeling, the partner
right,
feels
right. Do we always have to do this thing? Yeah.
That, oh, this isn't about me. You're not making love with me. You're having sex with me present while it's all about this article of clothing, for instance.
Yeah. Okay. So what should a partner do? I've had both cases, both kinds of things where it's discovered later or other times it has been disclosed from the beginning, but somehow is becoming a problem, you know, because again, we don't see in our offices the people that aren't struggling with this. So
no, we can
what do you advise a partner who maybe just is discovering
you.
That this is
it's
going on?
It's not your fault. One of the things that comes up for partners is, does this mean I'm gay? And of course, we're not. Nothing. The words of Seinfeld, nothing wrong with that. And it's disturbing to people to like suddenly start questioning their orientation.
Right.
Now, what does it mean that I've been attracted to this person? So they're, you know, we can say, well, I don't know what it means, you know, but you're probably the same heterosexual woman you were before you knew this. Yeah, because you're right. This is how you've always identified, and this is you've been attracted to this person who has appeared to be male and has told you he's male. So you have that, you know. And then they're scared that does this mean this person is a transsexual is going, which another outdated term. Does this mean this person's going to continue to want to transition to be a female, and then everything that goes with that? Well, we don't know. We have to ask. So it might mean that, it might mean not, but let's look at your relationship.
Right.
And then it really, after there needs to be a period of adjustment, because someone finding this out suddenly, it's like, you know, something out of sci-fi where suddenly this pond person jumps out. Who have I been married to? Who have I been in a relationship? Who have I been having sex with? You know, this.
Yeah.
So we need to get, everybody needs to get to know each other again. We need to kind of have a period of adjustment, help the person finding out, just get through the PTSD part of it, of questioning themselves, questioning everything in their life, to then coming around to, okay, what does this mean? Now let's, can we have a deeper communication, a deeper knowing each other?
Yeah.
And then making a decision, okay, do I want to be with this person? And if I want to be with this person, okay, things are going to change a bit. It's not going to go back the way it was. Yep. So, and then it comes down to how is the cross-dresser? What are they really experiencing? And what are they okay with? And what is the partner okay with? And then it's like any other marriage or relationship where you just kind of negotiate what you like to do, what I like to do. What do we need to do together? What do we want to do together? What am I okay with you doing with someone else? You know, so I've known people that have been all over with that. I've known couples where it's like, okay, the wife tells the cross-dresser, you can go to meetings and go out and socialize once a month. Dress up, do your thing once a month. And that's what they agree to. Would the cross-dresser like to do more? Are they totally happy? No, they're not. But that's, you know, we can't always have it all. So we.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing about being in a partnership, right? There's two people to consider. And it does seem like this would be more complicated with somebody who's, where it's a paraphilic disorder, where it's a requirement for arousal, or it's a huge part of the
so
sex life. And
if
that's not a turn on for the partner somehow, that seems
that one
more complicated.
To the other extreme, well, the extreme would be that they break up altogether. But the other extreme of staying together is they start doing everything together, and they do it with the cross-dresser dressed, and they go out in public, and there's groups, there's Tri-S. I think Tri-S is still around. They're no longer in Miami, but of all things, you think that they're not. But there are, so it used to be Tri-S, the Society for the Second Self, I think it was. And it used to be really big when I first got into this in the 90s. And I haven't quite kept up. That was a group for heterosexual cross-dressers and their partners, their female partners. And it became it was a big social thing. And in fact, they didn't let transgender people in there. They didn't let anyone who was transitioning in because, for one thing, the wives wanted a safe place to be with husbands who are just cross-dressing. But then they'd all go out and there'd be cruises. They've been on cruises before.
Yeah, it's really a different experience.
Cruises that were all Tri-S people and, you know, a lot of stuff. Yeah. And then, you know, I've seen people where the cross-dresser just, you know, just becomes a way of life. And then they're just, you know, hey, this is how it is. And the grandchildren come over and everybody's cool with it. And so, you know,
yeah, that's a lovely vision, you know, and I think it's, you're speaking to something too, which is helpful for people to realize they're not alone. This is not the only person doing this. This is common. You're not, you know, people have navigated this before, and it always helps to have that social support, I think. Do you have thoughts about when somebody who's a cross-dresser should tell a partner, should tell their children, should tell, I mean, you know, maybe should is the wrong word,
so
but
you know, shoulds, but I would... You know, recommend.
Right. But
if you tell somebody before you ever get into an intimate relationship, because otherwise, now you're down that rabbit hole. And whenever you do reveal a secret, it's going to be traumatic for no other reason than someone who loves you is saying, how could you betray me? How could you have kept the secret? So that's the first thing. And then I get why people keep the secret, but they're thinking, well, I can keep this secret because this is something I've always kept secret, and it's become habitual. And maybe once I get married, I won't need to do this. Maybe I'll be able to stop. Maybe I won't have to do it so often. Maybe I'll just do it when I go away on business trips. Maybe.
Yeah.
And it really very seldom, well, again, I can't say how often that works because I see it when it doesn't work. But, you know, there's always sooner or later, you run the risk of the wife finding a bra in your somewhere and you're like, mine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it, you know, it just sort of keeps you distant and not seen with the partner, and you've got that secret. Sure. That secret is so hurtful to both people instead of just sort of living in the light, you know? So
probably not.
Did I miss anything? Anything else you want to say about it that I forgot
to
ask?
Or? Now with a lot of the younger generation, so many different ways of identifying their gender. We're just seeing a lot more presentation stuff that they would, you know, a lot of people aren't calling themselves cross-dressers. They're calling themselves, they either try to avoid calling themselves anything, or they're calling themselves whatever they want. And you have to ask, you know, how do you refer to yourself? What pronouns do you use? How do you, and it really boils down to why are you showing up in my office?
Yeah.
What's your problem? What's your issue? How is it a problem for you? So it's not just what's the problem. How is it a problem for you? And we can certainly extend that to parents, family members, friends. If someone comes out and says, this is what I do, or if you see someone looking differently other than stereotypical, you can ask them, you know, what is the meaning of this for you? What are you saying about yourself?
Yeah.
How would you like me to refer to you? What pronouns would you like me to use? The protocols. If you're with a cross-dresser, when they're in male presentation, you refer to them with male pronouns. If they're in female presentation, refer to them with female pronouns. It's just kind of you can ask, always ask. But ask them, what name would you like me to use? And use that name and use those pronouns.
Right.
Be respectful, because if a person is, this is who I am today and not how I'm identifying, then we want to be respectful of that.
Yeah. Right. Well, thank you. Where can people find you online? What would you like to mention in terms of anybody that might want to reach out?
DrCarolClark.com. And that's for my practice. Although I'm spending most of my time now training other therapists. So I have about three schools. And one you can find it at therapycertification.org. And that encompasses my sex therapy program. I do kink, hypnotherapy, addiction, behavioral and substance addiction, and sex offender treatment. So we have all those specialties, sex addiction, just sex therapy. And then I have a PhD program that encompasses a lot of that.
Right,
so anybody who's a clinician or a healthcare professional and wants a PhD in clinical sexology, you can go to clinicalsexologyphd.org. And then there's the transgender program, where we train therapists and other healthcare professionals to work with the trans community. And that's at transgendercertification.com. And we really cover all of this in great, great detail and help therapists and others be able to work with all different variations and presentations of gender that they might encounter.
I had no idea you had that much going on. I feel especially honored that you've taken the time to talk to me, given that you're running three schools and a practice.
Being here with you gives me an opportunity to teach, to talk about something that I love, that I became just so interested in, enamored of, passionate about back in 1991 when I took my first class and met a trans panel of transgender people and just said, I want to know more. This is who I want to know. thank you so much for the opportunity. Great. Thank you, everyone out listening.
Well, thank you so much.
For listening, contact me anytime.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.